Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, March 23rd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, we all survived the eclipse, the full moon, the whatever, the equinox, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we tend to survive these things. That's one of the things about it. Despite all the doom and gloom, we do tend to survive.
We will always survive, will we not? It's just
you get to a point where your expiration, you hit your expiration date, then you don't survive anymore.
That's not the...
At least not in this life.
I'm not talking about the expiration date, Al. I'm just talking about we all survive just in various degrees of...
Comfort.
Yes, various degrees.
Convenience. Some of us survive running down the road with the bullets flying past our ears. You know, yeah, I'm out of here. But surviving.
But yeah. You survived. Yeah. Gold survived today.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, gold was, woohoo, 830, up 830. At $1,191.70, you have silver up 31 at $1,714. Platinum was up 11 at $1,150, and palladium was down a dollar at $779. The USDX today down 9.2, 96.88. They weren't able to keep it at that 1 point level very long, were they now? That 100 points.
No, they touched it, and then they had a rebound on this.
Yeah. And you know what? They were going to run it. And, you know, just like anything else, it's a trade. It's a way for them to make money. They ran it. Now they're all short, and now you're just going to see it flutter down. I'm not saying it's going into, you know, it's not going to drop out of bed, but it'll flutter. It'll flutter to the downside. Crude oil today was up 81, 47.38. Paper markets today. You have the Dow. Oh, I haven't been following the paper markets in the last hour of trade, and they actually pushed it into the negative territory, down 11. Not big, but at least it turned negative after being positive all day. 18,116. The NASDAQ was down 15. At 5,010, same way with that. And the S&P just down a couple points at 2104. 10-year yield keeps trending down. 1.91%, down 0.02. That means the euro's got to be stronger today. Yep, 1.10, up 1.31. That's the same thing there. They were short in the euro the time the dollar was going. You know, it's all a game. It's all manipulated, and they make billions and billions of dollars on it. Unfortunately, you and I are not privy to their little games and moves, and we should become a pal with one of them. I think I'll call George Soros and say, "Hey, George, how you doing today?"
As if you could get to him.
Hey, buddy. How about or maybe Hillary. Hey, Hill, how'd you take 10 grand? And
send her an email. Don't call her. Send her an email.
Yeah, okay.
Make that comment. Shakespeare made the comment, the world is a stage and the people on it are but players. There are words to that effect. The way it is right now, the world, he was wrong. The world is not a stage. It's a casino.
Off Broadway.
It's a casino, and the people in it are but, I don't know, suckers, gamblers. I don't know what you want to put, name you want to put on it, but they are not the croupier, and they are not the casino owners. And
well, we had the Germany DAX that was down 141 points after its. I mean, it's an incredible rise in the German DAX that was down a little over almost 1.25%. Down 141 at 11,895. Japan was up. Hong Kong was up. London was up just fractionally. So, you know, they'll start taking a little hit on the head a little bit as their currency gets a little bit stronger. But, you know, does it really – I mean, it means something because we follow it. It gives us an idea. It gives us possibly a trend. But on the other hand, hey, we know where this is headed. We know where it's going to go. And
we just
they
don't
play,
know when.
We just don't know when.
Yep.
And, you know, you're going to see the dollar rise, euro drop, bonds go up, down, euro up, and, you know, something will bring everything to a halt. And when it does, I wouldn't want to be anywhere on those tracks, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, too, is you had the fear market, you had the emotion, the fear and greed index. And that was really trending. I mean, last week, at the end of the week, it was like down in the third, it's like 38, somewhere around in there, 37. Today, it's 50.
Meaning that they have become more fearful in the last couple of days.
And it came back a little bit less fearful because we're at 50. That's higher than 30.
What I'm trying to say, no, that's what I, it was relatively low
yes.
fearful level at 30. Now it's up to 50, increasing fear. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
and rightfully so, I think. You know, it depends on what you're afraid of. Are you afraid of the inevitable, or are you afraid of the immediate? If you look at the circumstances from an inevitable point of view, the stuff has got to hit the fan. If you look at it from an immediate point of view, it might not hit the fan today or tomorrow or, you know. So it's hard to say, you know, what are you afraid of, or what are people afraid of? Are they afraid of the immediate, or are they afraid of the inevitable, which may take a little longer?
Well, I was talking to you prior to the program, Al.
Yeah.
And there's some big money coming into gold. And it was, you know, hey, we've had this level of pricing for gold in the past couple of years. We've seen a dip into the 1150 area a few times, 1190 area a few times, but it didn't really do much cause for alarm. Sure, you had those that are a little more in tuned with what's going on, and they would come into the market and they would take advantage of the lower prices. But there's some big money coming into the market, and we've done some significant trades here at Discount Gold and Silver, and it's funds where they feel there is something definitely brewing and about ready to come.
Well,
to the peak.
The point is that the dollar has been near, well, it has recently hit 100 on the U.S. dollar index. Now, the relevance of the U.S. dollar index, everybody quotes it. The relevance is general, perhaps more than specific, in the sense that, it means the dollar is considerably more valuable than it was a year ago this time. You buy low and you sell high. What's low? Gold has been low. You sell high. What's been high? The dollar. Now is the perfect time, judging from the numbers we have at the moment, now is a good time to be selling dollars and buying gold. It's just a perfect natural trade, and that's what you're seeing in these in the orders you're talking about. Some of the people out there are smart enough to understand this, and they're just saying, look, I'm going to get the most bang for the buck I possibly can. I think the dollar's going lower, therefore I'm going to sell my dollars now, and I'm going to trade them for something that I think is going higher, which I believe will be gold, and that's going to be the basis for the trades you're seeing, or at least that's my speculation.
And not only that, they're taking advantage. I mean, if they're holding paper and they're doing, you know, here you have these markets that are hitting all-time highs, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, hey, maybe now's a good time to take some of that profit off the table. And, you know, how much higher can they really go? And even if they do go higher, I'm sitting pretty nice here at this level. So why not pull out those funds and get them safe? So whatever happens, when it happens, at least I'm offsetting any of the paper investments that I continue to hold. So smart choices, smart decisions for these people that are doing it. The ones that aren't smart are the ones that are just sitting back and thinking it's going to go lower, buying into these predictions. You know, oh, gold's going to be 700. Well, you know, when it goes to 250, I'll buy it. Well, you know what? Go buy a fishing pole and do some fishing, because that's, you know, you're not really serious about buying gold anyway.
There's one other point besides that. Let's suppose that the price of gold did drop to where we're talking about, $250.
Well, it's all relative.
Yeah, I understand relative. That, but here's what it's relative to. It means that the dollar's current value, it's not just a question of the price of gold would fall by, say, 50%, maybe more. It's a question that the purchasing power of the dollar would deflate and increase by 100%. It'd have to double. All right? What would that do to the economy? It's the kind of deflation is always, well, it's certainly the majority of the time, it's a hallmark of economic depression. We do get into hyperinflationary depressions periodically, but I don't know if we've ever been in one, but we do since we have pure fiat currencies. The hyperinflationary depressions become possible. But generally speaking, when you have a depression, you have dollar deflation. If the price of gold drops as low as some of these people are predicting, it's almost certain that we will be so deep in an economic depression, all right, that you'll be scrambling and willing to shoot people for a can of beans. So some of the predictions of the super low dollar, you know, nothing's impossible, but you got to look at the context. What is the context of that? It might be that the dollar is super high and gold is super low. It's conceivable. It's unlikely, but it's conceivable, but it'll be in the midst of one extraordinary depression, something that'll probably make the Great Depression look like, you know, small item, not necessarily all that great. It is unlikely and it's improbable that the price of gold is going to drop dramatically below where it is. Nothing's impossible, can't give you prophecy, but odds are, and I've been saying this for several months now, the idea that the dollar, the increasing value, can't be allowed to continue because it's deadly for debtors. As the dollar grows in value, you got to pay off your debts with more expensive dollars. It costs more to pay off your debt. That pushes a lot of debtors. People who took out a mortgage on the home, a loan on their automobile, businesses, borrowed money from the bank, and all of a sudden, oops, they borrowed anticipating inflation, and all of a sudden we're in an era of deflation. It's going to put a bunch of them into bankruptcy. If we put enough of them into bankruptcy, that will only aggravate the economic condition. It'll push us closer and deeper into a depression. Government can't tolerate deflation. They've done it for 8 months, much to my surprise. But I don't believe it can be sustained unless they want to collapse the economy. So what do you do? I don't know. Like I say, the world is to some extent a casino. It's not a play. It's a casino. And this is not a game. you really do have to think, not just act. You have to think, how am I going to place my bet? And we're caught in a casino where you do have to place your bets. It's not easy to just sit off on the sidelines and say, well, I'll watch this. Because if you have any wealth, odds are your wealth is denominated in paper dollars.
I have an article here, Al, that sort of just shows how we're at a high. You know, when markets are at a high, just like back in when we had the can you take over, Al, please?
Yeah, I can.
Thank you.
All right. Millie has pressing business to take care of, and so I got to do this on natural. Let's talk about. We got 5 minutes till we take the break. Here's an article by Michael Snyder. It's entitled 10 Charts, which show we are much worse off than just before the last economic crisis. He's collected 10 charts from the Federal Reserve, ultimately. I believe that's the source on the Federal Reserve. Let me find the first one. Yeah, federal debt, they point out how that has doubled in the last 7 or 8 years, since 2007, national debt's doubled. Total debt is up by, it was $50 trillion. We're now approaching $60 trillion. Total debt, not just federal debt. He has some others in here. The velocity of money has decreased dramatically. Velocity of money is the rate that a dollar goes from hand to hand to hand. And the faster the velocity of money, the faster we spend things. As soon as I get $100 in my pocket, I go out and I spend it. All right? And as soon as somebody else gets that $100, they spend it. And then the next guy spends it. All right? And the economy tends to, at least it seems to prosper when we have a high velocity of money. There's a lot of economic activity. And based on that, there's an opportunity to generate profits, revenues for the government. I don't know who comes out ahead necessarily, but when we have low velocity of money, people aren't spending as much. It's all means. And if we're not spending as much, they're not buying as many new shoes, new clothes, new cars, new TVs, new homes, new stocks, new gold coins. If we don't spend things, if we are not spending, then prices tend to fall. If prices tend to fall, we tend to slide into an economic depression. It's one of the hallmarks of typical depressions. He's also got the home ownership rate, which has fallen to a 20-year low. It's continued to decline even after the Great Recession in 2008. It is not cause for optimism. Got the employment rate. It's fallen from 63% in 2007 to 59% now. It's not an enormous fall, but it's 4% from 63 to 59. It's another hallmark it's another bit of evidence where he's got labor force participation rates, inactivity rate for men in their prime working years. It's people who aren't working. Median household income is falling. Inflation continues. He sees inflation continuing, which is contrary to the evidence that you'll see in the U.S. dollar index. That's evidence that we have deflation. And the truth is we have some of both. Government dependence continues to grow. He just says it's crystal clear that we're much worse condition today than we were prior to the last economic crisis. That would be the Great Recession of 2008. And his point is that we are far more vulnerable to adverse economic problems than we were 7 years ago. All right? 7 years ago, we were in pretty good shape. We went into the Great Recession, and because we were in fairly good shape going in, we had fundamental problems, but nevertheless, we were in better shape than we were now, and therefore, we could get through the Great Recession with less damage than we would experience if we went into that Great Recession right now. And what he's concerned about is, look, things are fragile, things are dangerous, stuff hits the fan. It's going to be worse this time than it was the last time. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'll be back. Melody will join us shortly as soon as she concludes whatever business she has to transact. And here on Financial Survival, please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Well, thanks, Melody. Well, matter of fact, let me finish up with what I was doing here.
Uh-oh. What were you doing while I was gone, Al?
Well, I was telling people about an article from Michael Snyder. 10 charts would show we are much worse off than just before the last economic crisis. And I want to talk about two of the points he made out of the 10. And one his number one point referred to the national debt. He said just prior to the last recession, the official U.S. national debt was a little over $9 trillion. Since that time, it has nearly doubled. So does that make us better off or worse off? The answer, of course, is obvious. Now, that's Michael Snyder's opinion. And I don't necessarily agree with that. The idea that it's obvious, the answer is obvious. Because the answer is at least confused because we have a debt-based fiat dollar, all right? With a debt-based currency, the more debt we have, the more wealth we should enjoy. It is presumed the greater your debt, the more wealth you have. The dollar is a debt-based instrument. It's not based on an asset like gold or silver. It's a liability. And the argument is the more of these debt instruments you have in your pocket, the wealthier you are. And it's not clear. When you look at this and you think to yourself, okay, we have twice as much debt as we had prior to the Great Recession. All right, 2007, we had $9 trillion. Now we have $18 trillion. Now, if it's true that debt is a form of wealth in a fiat currency, in the fiat monetary system we have right now, in the debt-based monetary system we have, if that's true, then wouldn't it follow that if we have twice as many dollars out there today in debt as we had in 2007, shouldn't we be twice as wealthy as we were back then? And you can look around and ask yourself, we have twice as much debt, and are we twice as wealthy? And I say the answer is clearly no, we're not. And the significance of that answer, it tells us something about the lunacy that's inherent in a debt-based currency. Any fool can see that if you are carrying little debt instruments in your pocket, they shouldn't be counted as assets. And yet we have a monetary system that says, debt is an asset. And the more debt you have, the wealthier you are. Bunk! We have the official, they say it's the official rate is $18 trillion we're in the hole right now, the national debt. All right? The real national debt is probably, according to the Congressional Budget Office and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff, the real national debt, including unfunded liabilities, is over $200 trillion. That's $750,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. Now, well, maybe not 750. It's 700 ballpark. Do you feel that you have $700,000 in assets? You got another $700,000 for your spouse and another $700,000 for each of your kids? You do have $700,000, your fair share of the national debt, if it's as big as the Congressional Budget Office and Lawrence Kotlikoff guesstimate. Your fair share is $700,000. You got it? Do you feel wealthier because the government's gone that far into debt? So my point is that, and I think this is an interesting observation. If the debt doubled and our sense of wealth has not also doubled, it's just a kind of evidence to tell us what is obvious to anyone who bothers to consider this. We are living in an irrational world where we have learned to treat debt as if it was an asset. This is identical in many respects to the old fable about the emperor who's been persuaded by his tailors, that would be the central bankers, that he can parade around in the nude wearing invisible clothes. And we are part of that world where the emperor is dressed so magnificently. No, he's not. He's butt naked. You understand? And the same thing is true when we are led to believe that a fiat currency is a measure of wealth. It's a debt instrument. It's not an asset. And it's the same thing as the fable about the emperor with no clothes on. And part of the reason we do this program is we're trying to tell all of you to at least get yourself a loincloth. Have a little respect for the rest of us. Stop parading around the all together and get yourself some gold. Get yourself some silver. You know, have some respect for yourself. Stop being seduced by this crazy idea that these debt instruments are going to make us all wealthy, because they're simply not. Here's another point from Mike Lee. He says, even though Barack Obama promises that deficits are under control, more than $1 trillion was added to the national debt in fiscal year 2014. What we are doing to future generations by burdening them with so much debt is beyond criminal. Again, I don't exactly agree. I agree with most of what Michael has to say. He's a brilliant guy and the rest of it. But what are we doing to future generations? What we're doing to the future generations is no more criminal than what the big European lenders have done to Greece. The big European lenders loaned more debt-based currency to Greece than Greece could possibly repay. It was stupid to lend them that much money. Right? It wasn't just stupid for Greece to take it. It was stupid for the lenders to lend Greece that much money. And as a result, Greece has since been forced to admit it can't repay the existing debt and won't really try to do so. And that means the creditors, who were so smart when they loaned all that debt-based currency to Greece and seemingly put current and future generations of Greeks into debt bondage, it means they aren't going to recover their currency that they loaned to Greece. In retrospect, subjecting Greece to debt bondage was probably more stupid than criminal. It's like me taking money and loaning it to a squirrel. Right? And the squirrel is going to take my $100 bills and say, hey, this makes good insulation, chew them up, and paper them around inside its nest so it can get through the wintertime. How am I going to get my $100 back? I got to be stupid to lend my money to a squirrel. The big lenders had to be stupid to lend so much money to Greece. And the same thing is true right now. When Michael says what we're doing to future generations is criminal, I'm thinking that future generations are going to do just what the Greeks have done. So, no, we can't pay this debt. This is crazy. Nobody can pay the debt. It's impossible to be paid. Future generations will simply say, sorry, Charlie, we're not going to repay the debt. So who is being brutalized by all this debt? And the answer is probably going to be the generation that goes in that depends on the government in the near future to provide its pensions and its Social Security and maybe free medical care and whatever else, welfare and subsidies. These are the people that are supposedly getting over right now. They're getting something free from government. Government is borrowing from future generations to provide something to people that are living today. Well, people living today say, yay, yay, give me that free lunch. Love that free lunch. But the day is coming when the cost of the free lunch is going to come out of your pension. It's going to come out of your Social Security. And when that happens, the youth will still be able to work. And a lot of people are going to be too old to work. And they're going to say, oh my gosh, how could this have happened? How could all of a sudden I'm broke and I can't get any government money out of the government? Well, you were robbing future generations. You agreed to a government that lives on borrowing money. And you didn't mind because it was going into your pocket and you were getting the free lunch. Only the day is going to come on, you're going to find out, oh, the free lunch was paid for with my pension. It was paid for with my contributions to Social Security. Everybody's going to be hurt when the time rolls around that government can't continue to shell out to the same extent it has in the past. Future generations will be hurt. Current generations will be hurt. Nobody's going to get out of this thing without some sort of problem. But the youth will be able to absorb the problem and just refuse to pay the debt. Because it's impossible to pay. And that means the generations primarily responsible for allowing this debt to accumulate will be the generations who wind up paying at least some of that debt by losing some of their pension funds and whatever other government benefits they could count on. So, anyway, I'm just trying to make the point. When we say, oh my gosh, what were we doing to future generations? We may be teaching them an extraordinary lesson. We may be putting them in circumstances where they say, holy cow, whatever we do, don't ever let the government go deeper into debt. You saw what they did to dad and mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. They had nothing to support them in their retirement. We got to make sure we don't behave as foolishly as our parents and grandparents did. Might be the great lesson, maybe even the benefit before this is done. A painful lesson, painful benefit, but maybe, who knows. But it's just stupid to think that we can borrow money on future generations and the future generations will willingly pay it. It's just stupid. It should never have been done. Every budget should be pay as you go. How much money you got, that's how much you can spend. No borrowing. No deficit financing. All right? If you need extra money for some program, take it out of some other program. But you can't just go deeper and deeper and deeper into debt without bringing on the moment that appears to be approaching. We're going to find that day, can't pay the debt, and there is going to be trouble like none of us have seen. Last time we saw the kind of trouble that might be headed our way, Civil War. This is bigger than the Great Depression, bigger than World War II. You want to see a comparable event in American history? Go back and take a look at Civil War. Does that make any sense, Melody?
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about the youth, and we do talk about those, the people today, the parents and grandparents that are holding money today in their accounts and their retirement accounts. And they will not allow people to walk away with that money. They just will not. I mean, people will go broke, and this will all collapse. Here is, I thought it was an interesting article. It's interesting. There's a growing number of people, and these are the youthful people, the younger people, that are on believing that algorithms can provide rational advice at a cost well below the traditional advisors. A handful of automated investment startups created in the past few years have now passed the $4 billion in assets under management. Now, that's not a lot of money, $4 billion, considering everything.
It is to me.
Well, it is to me, too. But when you're looking at a trillion-dollar wealth management industry, nice. You know, it's not a lot. But the point is, you have these markets at all-time highs. They're looking for ways to get everybody and their brother into the market. These investment management firms usually only begin, they have minimums of 100,000 to a million for the traditional wealth managers. Well, now they're after these younger people. Most of these younger people are inheriting a lot of this money, and they're looking to take that from them too. So, you know, if anybody has any money, they are out there to get them. But this is another sign. This is the shoe shine boy that was polishing, I believe it was Rothschild's shoes, and started to give Rothschild, maybe it was Rockefeller, one of those two men in the 29, stock tips. And they turned around and says, when your shoe shine boy begins to give you stock tips, that's when you go sell everything. This is similar. This is similar where you
and
have
why
other people.
Why do you think they said when the shoeshine boy gives you stock tips?
It's the mania. It's the mania. It's the tulip mentality. It's
it means that there's people that aren't qualified or in the market.
Exactly. And they don't have the money.
It's everybody.
They don't have the money.
They could, though, because they borrowed. They were borrowing from the banks to go into the markets.
But, I mean, they're going to take their last dollars that they have and hope that they can, you know, hit the lottery, hit the big one in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's a sign of the top. It's a sign of the peak. We had this in 2000 when we had the tech bubble. You had all these day traders out there trying to make a living and trying to, you know, think that they're going to do what Wall Street does, not knowing how Wall Street is manipulated and it's all done by inside trading. And, of course, they all lost their shirts, and this is very similar. So I thought it was a sign that shows exactly where we are. And
it's also a sign that we'd be dumb.
Hmm?
All right? It's a sign that we'd be dumb. You can see what's happened in the Dow. That thing has been run in large measure based on algorithms. What's happened in the price of gold? It's been suppressed in large measure based on the use of algorithms. The market has been distorted by algorithms, and someone is betting that they've built a better algorithm and the world will beat a path to your doorstep. But the fact of the matter is the algorithm is it's essentially fixed by whoever are the systems analysts that said, well, I've got a new and improved algorithm. And if you believe my algorithm, right, they've just got a new way of fixing the dice. They've got a new way of calculating and predicting that doesn't exactly respond to what the market should be. And the market should be an expression of the opinion of all of us put together. Right, and I'm by all of us. I mean, all of us that are in the market, And if you're in the market, your vote, you get to vote what you think the price of gold is. I get to vote what I think is the price. And we push and shove. And, you know, some of us want it higher and some of us want it lower. And over time, the market moves in certain directions. And the market is something living. There has a certain life to it and a certain humanity to it. But you get those algorithms and whoever is devising the program. I mean, you could create an algorithm. It might be the best algorithm the world's ever seen. But if it was, why would you share it with everyone else? Why not just use that algorithm with $500,000 and watch it multiply up into $5 million and $5 billion and keep it all for yourself? Going to make that algorithm, you could put a little line of code in there. Then on May 15th in 2016, there would be a flash crash, and the market would just drop like a stone. And you could buy everything at the bottom, and an hour later, everything would fly back up again. I mean, it opens the door. These algorithms open the door for market manipulation. And they make it easier, not harder. They make it easier. Why would people do it? Why go into it? We're going to go into some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addis here with Millie Cederstrom. This is Financial Survival. Here's an article from CBS 13 in Folsom, California. The headline is New California Drought Restrictions Coming to Restaurants, Hotels as Home Rules Get Stricter. State water officials are going into emergency mode as it plans to impose tighter conservation restrictions after another dry winter. Reservoir levels statewide are at the lowest they've ever been. And the way scientists are seeing it, things are only going to get worse. a scientist at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. We reported on this last year. He calculates that there's only about a year of water supply left in California reservoirs. And he's cool. He's talking not just behind the dam. He's talking about rivers and lakes and ponds and the rest of that. He thinks this thing, big problem, about a year from now, this is going to be, and the problem is amplified by the fact that they have drained much of the groundwater. Right? They've sucked it out for agriculture and whatever, pulled it up with pumps, dispersed it on the ground to water people's lawns and grow fruit and vegetables and so on, and they're going to be out of water. Now, their hotel and restaurants, they won't be giving you water when they sit down for lunch or dinner. They're not going to give you a glass of water unless you ask for it. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's an interesting thing. If they're going to just, that makes a difference. Things are so stressed that whether or not you and I have a glass of water with our lunch is going to make a difference as to how much water they have in California. Hotels won't change your sheets and towels daily. Why? Because if they're going to change them, they have to wash them, and washing requires water. All right? They're not going to put a new clean sheet on your bed every day. I'm going to guarantee you that once they get in the habit, I'm going to suppose that you keep the same sheets. They'll have somebody come in, they'll make the bed for you. And it'll be the same sheet you used last night. And maybe the same sheet you used the night before. I don't know how long your sheets are going to stay on the bed. But I'm going to guarantee you that once...
the same sheet from the people before the week. Before.
Once they get in the habit of they're not changing the sheets for you, okay? When you get fresh sheets, you get in there and you get fresh sheets. And after that, they don't change them until you leave. I guarantee you the time is coming when they're going to be looking and say, we let these, leave these sheets here for the next person.
They won't lie.
We're going to see.
Yeah.
We're going to see. They're going to get tougher enforce fines, $500 a day for people that are watering their gardens and their lawns and whatever. And it's going to be restricted to 2 days a week and $500 a fine if you exceed that limit. Conservation inspectors will face a $10,000 fine. The inspectors, if they hand residents and businesses just warnings rather than hand out citations and fines, that's almost unprecedented. The government is going to be fined $10,000 each if they don't enforce the water conservation laws. Now that's interesting. All right. That's evidence of the desperation. A guy by the name of Gomberg, I'm not sure what his official position is, he said this is an all-hands-on-deck moment for the state. California's $2 trillion gross domestic product makes it the number one state GDP in the United States. If California were an independent nation, it would rank as the 11th largest national GDP in the world. What happens to the California GDP if 4 years of drought drags into five? All right? We're not just talking about the production of fruits and vegetables. What happens to California industry and therefore jobs if California runs out of water? What happens to the U.S. economy if the California economy tanks? What happens to California debts and bonds and pension funds if they run out of water? The implication is that next year could not only be critical for California, but also for the United States. Now, we live in critical years. That's not to say this isn't a critical year. Any year isn't critical. But we see possibility of serious implications, and that domino effect could run out of California starting next year. And one of the things that really interests me, that I think is interesting, is that California is in its fourth drought year right now, according to this report. We've had drought for 4 years, and California is about to run out of water if we go into a fifth year of drought. Now, I'd look at that and I'd say to myself, it doesn't seem like a lot of drought. I know, I get the drought is a problem. I understand that. If someone was going to say that we'd run out of water after 20 years of drought, I'd say, oh, okay, I understand that. 10 years, okay. But 4 years? 4 years of drought is enough to maybe put the state on the skids? That's in 5 years, actually 5 years of drought to next year to really put the hammer down according to this report. It's evidence that the state of California is extremely fragile. If all it takes is 4 years, 5 years to shut the state, to do significant economic damage to the state, then that state is, it's skating on ice, figuratively speaking. In the drought, they're skating on ice. Here's another article from the LA Times. And the headline is, California public workers may be at risk of losing their promised pensions. And what they explain is that there's a recent bankruptcy case. Stockton, California declared bankruptcy. The courts declared that they didn't have to pay, because they were declaring bankruptcy, they wouldn't have to pay the pension funds for the former city workers. All right. And the city workers had argued that the pension funds were sacrosanct, and no matter what happened, if the city went bankrupt, they still had to pay the pension funds. The court says, nah, basically. Now, California government pensions may be terminated by bankruptcies of various California cities and counties. But what will happen to California government pensions if California runs out of water? You can bet that the continued drought that we talked about in the previous article, you can bet that it will contribute to more California municipal bankruptcies. You can bet that continued drought will contribute to more defaults on California government pensions. You can bet that the probability of collecting any California government pensions is declining. I'm not arguing that all of those pensions will default. I'm not even arguing that the majority of the pensions will default. But I am arguing that a lot of them, and I won't be surprised, 25, 30%, maybe more, California government pensions are going to default, not simply because of court rulings, but perhaps because of the drought, which has to slow everything down. It has to slow down jobs, industry, tax revenues. Where are you going to get the money to pay the pensions? This goes back to the same idea we talked about earlier in the program, about lending money to Greece and lending so much money that the Greeks couldn't pay it. And the Greeks finally said, guess what? We can't pay it, therefore we're not going to pay it. Same thing's going to happen. People get greedy with their pensions. They say, hey, we've got a government union, and if you don't agree to give us more money and more pensions, well, guess what? We'll go out on strike. Then you'll be sorry. And the government and the legislators and the city council say, oh, okay, let's give them more money. We'll promise to them in pensions. But the day's going to come when the pensions can't be paid. And the people who were motivated by greed to essentially extort higher pensions from city, county, municipalities, and the state government of California, they're going to find out they're not going to get those pensions. And from an ethical or moral perspective, that's not necessarily an injustice. Right? We all have an obligation, you know, not only to figure out, is it sensible for me to lend a bunch of money to my grandson? Does that make sense? Is it a good thing, or am I a fool to lend that money to the grandson? Am I a fool to lend the money to my daughter or a good friend of mine or somebody who lives across the street? We have a responsibility as lenders to not lend more than people can repay. And that responsibility has been completely lost. Nobody cares. We get a piece of paper. We use the paper as an asset. We figured out ways to make money off the promise to pay. But it's a foolishness. It's something that's... And likewise, if you are borrowing money, you can't just walk in with a liar's loan and say, oh, yeah, I make 100 grand a year. Yeah, I'm good for it. No problem. There is going to be a problem. And insofar as both the lenders and the borrowers have said, what the heck? Let's just issue loans and we don't have to be responsible about it. You will have to be responsible. And that's what the Great Recession has been all about. And that's one of the things that if we go into a greater depression, that'll be another cause. There's a requirement. This can't just be party time. Somebody's actually got to be responsible. And for considerable period of time, we haven't found those responsible people in our banks, in our governments, and even in the public. Going to have to get a sense of responsibility, and that will include not just me telling other people to be responsible. I have to learn to be responsible. And if we do, to the extent we learn that, then we become sensible. And instead of looking to make a fast buck, we start looking to protect what we have and maybe make a reasonable rate of return. Now, how sensible is it to get yourself some fiat currency, some debt-based currency? I would argue it's not sensible. It's more evidence of this party mentality. Shop till you drop. Live in a world where 60-70% of the economy is based on consumers rather than producers. What a that's like eating your seed corn. Let's have a party and let's use our corn to make, corn whiskey. And we'll party down, and then when we don't have any seeds left to plant next year's crop, what are we going to eat then? We've been foolish and irresponsible, and we've done it because it is our nature and because our politicians encourage that irresponsible behavior. Vote for me, and I'll let you be irresponsible. But responsibility is going to come knocking sooner or later, and when it does, we're all going to have a problem. Except for Melody's dog, Ruby. Ruby will get through all right, isn't that right, Melody?
Yes, she will.
Uh-huh.
Yes, she
uh-huh.
will.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think we need to be more responsible?
Well, I think people find a hard time to be responsible in a world that is not responsible because it's, there's been so much pressure and it kind of, you can see, it's so easy to see the conditioning over the periods of years when we talk about peer pressure. And, there was this little, part of your peers, the pressure. And you can see how that was all conditioning and for people to act one way or another. Mm-hmm. And, we see this, in the schools and the bullying and the designer clothes. And, everybody is supposed to be the same. Everybody is supposed to be equal. Everybody is supposed to be equal to the higher ups. It's like, well, how do you get to the higher ups when you're not responsible? It's the mentality of I want it today, whether I can pay for it or not, because that pressure that's been put on me, that forces me to do these things. And it doesn't force them.
Not just force you to do it, but force you to believe that it's smart because everybody else is doing it.
Well,
if everyone else does it, then it must be okay. We don't have to research. We don't have to think. We don't have to make sensible judgments. We just have to do what the guy across the street's doing, and it could be that the guy across the street is an idiot.
It's like the Pavlov's dogs. Eventually, you're going to respond to that ringing of that bell to get your food. Or not to the dogs, but, Pavlov, what I'm talking about.
I understand what you're talking
yeah.
about. What you're talking about is when they run out of food, the dog hears the bell and he's waiting for the food, he's going to start biting people. The Pavlovian dogs, and there's lots of them around. Stop giving them food. Guess what? They're going to start biting the researchers. It'll be an interesting time. We'll watch and see.
Not little Ruby, though.
Not little Ruby. Yeah. You're just lucky that I saw somebody's got a 175-pound dog, and I can't even think of the proper name of the dog. One of the violent dogs that you see. Pit bull. 175-pound pit bull. That's one dog that'll never be with me. I'm not going to live with a dog that's big enough to eat me. You understand? Little dogs, fine. Big dogs, uh-uh. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. This is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left.